session number 10602, reel 17.
You've mentioned, Mr. Elliott, that you did manoeuvres with and training with Indian troops. What opinion had you of the Indian soldier?
Oh, they were good. They were good. They were more serious on training than we were. We just took it as a lark, more or less. But they didn't. They went at it full wholesale. We used to treat most training as a lark, really. Because we used to do it year in and year out. We could almost do the exercises in our sleep, just about. But you always had to be on the alert, and you always had to trust your Indian comrade as well as they trusted you. But I think they knew the same as we did. We were fed up with doing it. But we were there. The younger lads who came out, they might have been different, but like I was when I was first went out, you wanted to show the world that you were a British soldier. But after a time you got so used to it, it became, just like getting out of bed in the morning and just carrying on, everyday routine. That's what it was, just like that.
Were they smartly turned out?
Oh yes, always. Always. They were good soldiers. Don't make any mistake about them. They were good soldiers.
Was there any difference in the quality of them as Punjabis and Sikh or what have you?
Oh yes, there was always a difference. The elite was the Gurkhas. The Gurkha regiment was the elite of the whole of the Indian service. They were the only native troops who were allowed in a British soldier's canteen.
Did you work with Gurkhas at any time?
No, unfortunately I hadn't, but the battalion had. In the middle 20s, the battalion was in the Himalayas, at Razmak, on the northwest frontier. They were at a place called Razmak, and there was Gurkhas there. Now there was some action there, but with the hill tribesmen, they were objecting to not being paid or something, so they fired on the troops, and there were casualties within the Gurkhas, and our lads carried either the dead or the wounded Gurkhas into the camp. They saw to them that they were brought in, and that made a strong bond between the Gurkha regiment and ours. They were tough. They would never bring the kukri. That's the big knife they have, or whatever they call it. But they would never draw it without drawn blood. And if they were going to show a white man that blade, they would make a little cut in the own body just so blood would come. They wouldn't cut the person they were showing it to, but they would cut the horn. And our lads, the soldiers I met who had soldiered with them, they said they were great lads, and they were up to all the tricks, you know. They had a lot of snow up in the mountains in Razmak. They had a lot of snow, and the little blighters opened the windows and threw snowballs into them while they were in the rooms. And they would be off. We couldn't catch them.
Was there any problems with any of the Indian troops when you were there that you recall?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. They all seemed to get on together. Whether that was fact, I don't know. But in my personal number of years there, never any trouble. There wasn't any trouble. If there was any trouble, it would be between the military and civilians. But rarely, I can't ever remember it with the military.
How long were you at Dulali?
Well, we did 6 months in Dulali, then 6 months at Bombay.
And for part of that time, you were in the hospital doing this.
But
work.
in almost the whole of 1936, I was in the military hospital.
Where did you go after that?
The Sudan. Well, when it came the orders that we were getting ready to leave Bombay. We had to come back to the regiment for re-equipment or whatever you needed, because we were going to another new station. And as a battalion together, we would be based together. That was a fairy story, we win it. But the battalion was supposed to be in the South Barracks, but we had a detachment at a place called Adbara, which was halfway between Khartoum and Port Sudan.
Before we come to Sudan, which you deal with on the next tape, can we go through one of the two other items which mm-hmm. I haven't touched upon? The overall health of yourself and the men around you in the army in India, what was that like?
Pretty good.
What kind of things were you suffering from, or could you suffer from?
Well, you could suffer from heat exhaustion. You could suffer from various fevers, the main one being malaria. And of course, there was always the venereal diseases, which, when they went out...
Were they pretty rife?
No, there was the odd few, and generally it was the same ones time and again. I've heard old stories, I cannot confirm it, that the older soldiers were the worst, but the younger soldiers who were going out had learnt more and were more educated, and they were not as drunken, if you like. They took more. They would have their jar of beer or whatever it was. They would have the odd one. Where the older soldiers would have 3 or 4 pints. They would spend nearly all the money on pints, and they'd go out looking out for women. And of course, the native women, there was anywhere. They could have got them anywhere. It was that bad. Because a woman, a female, is not considered very much in Hindu life.
Did that cause problems from time to time?
Yes. Oh, right. When we were Bombay. When we first went to Bombay, the areas where it was more the brothel area, if you like, the red light district, the brothel area, was put out of bounds, and it had always been into bounds with every other regiment that had been there until we went.
You've got this on the other tape. Yeah,
that's on the other tape. That's there.
So, aside, VD aside, there was malaria. What other illnesses could you contact?
Skin diseases. Yeah, myself, I had a heat stroke once, and I had I was from here to both hands, full of blistered water blisters. Some kind of boils, they called them.
What was the treatment? Did you go to hospital?
Calamine lotion for these until they dried up, and then you were back on duty. You only got light duties, you didn't get excused. You did light duties, which meant you didn't do guards, but you did everything else. And you couldn't move your hands because of the... But there wasn't many like that. I often heard of somebody having sandfly fever, but I never came across anybody while I was in the hospital or while I was soldiering with it.
Did you lose anyone that you knew of, yourself personally, lose their life through illness or disease out there? Or accident?
I not servicemen, no, but one sergeant's wife, I think I've recorded this, but one sergeant's wife, when we were barrack poor, she was bitten by a dog and she died of that horrible disease. Rabies.
Mail. How often did you get mail? It had a long way to come.
Oh, well, there was a ship coming every week. The P&O liners, they had a regular service to the Far East, and the liner would call at Bombay, and then the mail would be put on the Fast Express, which would be a day and a half from Bombay to Calcutta. So from a letter being posted in this country, you might get it about 5 weeks' time. That was the old days, not today. But you might get it in 5 days. If you're in Bombay, you'll get it in about 3 weeks. You know what I mean? 5 weeks, and in Bombay, you'll get it in about 3 weeks. Because the P&O liners was faster than the troop ships. I think it was 3 weeks. for a Pinot liner. They were beautiful ships, the Strathnava, Strathmore, that's two I can remember. But we used to see them coming in Bombay, we used to look for them coming in, because we knew they were bringing mail.
You've been getting letters, did you get parcels?
No. Why, anything they sent out. Newspapers, yes, they would send the local papers out every so often. But regard parcels and that, no. I can't remember. They might have done, but I can't remember anybody yet.
Very little you really need in that climate.
No. No.
Was there any form of censorship of your letters?
No.
Not this time?
No, not in peacetime, no.
You mentioned some of the parades and beating the retreat. Were there any ceremonies that you had to go through? I'm thinking traditionally of the regimental ceremonies. Once a year, whatever the word. Did you have any parades of that nature?
There was Hooge Day. Don't ask me the date, I've forgotten it. But Hooge Day in the 2nd Battalion and Inkerman Day in the 1st Battalion. Now, when you were at Orm Station, the regimental depot celebrated that battalion's day. So while I was at Fenham Depot in 32-3, the 1st Battalion was stationed at Catrick, and the 1st Battalion's day was Inkerman Day, the 5th of November, and that was a celebration day when the colours were shown, and there was a dance. You did a parade on a morning, and you was like Christmas. You got the day off after you'd done your parade, then there was the dance. There was always a ball, what they called Inkerman Ball, and the colours was always displayed. Now the colours displayed at the depot were not of the two regular battalions. I think they were the regimental colour of the depot and of the 3rd Battalion. Now, I wasn't at the 1st Battalion the second year when they would celebrate, but I was too late for Hooge Day in the 2nd Battalion in 33 when I arrived in India. I missed it with the 1st Battalion at Catrick. Now, Mr. Hooge Day, but in 34, yes, we had Hooge Day.
Now, how was that in India?
Same. Wherever you were at, you turned out, you had your parade that day, special parade, and then after the parade, you would be given your big meal, and you would be free for the rest of the day. You wouldn't, except for normal guard duties, which were never relaxed. But for the normal duties, there were no other parades.
Did you have Indian dignitaries invited to these parades?
No, it was regimental. Now, when we were in the Sudan, on Hooge Day in 1937, the Black Watch was in the North Barracks, and we invited their pipers to come and play individually for a trophy. And we were given to understand the worst piper got the trophy because he played the only tune we could understand. Aye, that was it.
Aye. Was there any ceremonies attached to the governor and any traditional thing there that you were engaged in or got engaged in?
We always had the sovereign's birthday, which was the 3rd of June. In 1934, we did it on the Maidan at Calcutta, and there were, so that was a parade. The Bengal Lancers was on there. There was Indian regiments, the Bengal Lancers, and there was the battalion of the 60th Rifles, and there was our battalion. Now, we marched from Barrackpore, and we were under canvas on the Maidan, where the parade ground was. And we did the big parade there for the governor, governor general of Bengal.
And were civilians invited to that or attended that?
Well, yes, there was the the big place where everybody was there, Hindu, high ranking Hindus, high ranking generals, what have you. But we just carried on. To us, it was just another parade.
How did you cope with your quick march than your speed?
That was easy
on a parade with slower marching people with you.
Well, the 60th Rifles went before us. because they were the 60th and we were the 106th foot. So in regimental order, in numerical order, they went first. Well, they were as quick as us. Now, they used to allow a fair bit of ground between the last marching regiment, foot regiment, which would invariably be an Indian regiment. They would let them get a long way in front, and then the 60th Rifles, Bandon Bugles, like our own, they would set off and they would gallop down the road, and then we would follow them. We would give them a bit of a distance, but it was always said we marched quicker than they did, unofficially. The actual marching time of light infantry and rifle regiments, to the best of my knowledge, was 144 paces to the minute. That was the regimental quick march. But it was said that we occasionally, on ceremonial, always did 160.
Were you inspected by the hierarchy?
Oh, aye. You got the top brass. On those parades, the top brass come around. We had when we were at Bombay, we had a general, I forget his name or his high rank, but he was high rank and general leaving India. He'd done his term in India and he was either retiring or he was being posted back to Britain. And we had the colours on parade. So when you have the colours on parade, it's a high rank. Regimental and the Sovereign's colours. And we were at Bombay Docks, where there was a lot of crisscrossing of railway lines and what have you. And there was nowhere we could have the company, and I was on this parade, where the company could be in full extended straight. There had to be movement in there. And we were told that this general always found fault with any guard. He never gave praise, he always found fault. And we did everything we possibly could, as we were the champion company. B Company were the champion company at that time, and the champion company did all the honours. And we got a radio message from the ship after it had gone out to sea. The colours went in the centre of the guard. And mind, when you went to the Bombay docks, there was railway lines crisscrossing and always. There was no way you could have got a company in two straight lines with the colours in the centre. And that's what we got. We didn't care. It didn't matter a damn to us. But they were the things. And you know, when you say about the ceremonial parades, when the Church of England, when the church parades on a Sunday, they were strict. The Band and Bugles was on parade there. And you got a severe bashing if you were picked out for not being thoroughly cleaned. If any soldier was, if the inspecting officer, he would be a major. If it wasn't the CO, it would be a major. And if he found fault anywhere, that soldier would get at least a DCB. The least he would get would be a DCB. And you went in your best. And you had rifles, bayonets, and ammunition and going to church. You couldn't imagine that in this country, but we had to, after the Indian Mutiny.
Was service in India, or serving in India, easier than serving at home?
No comparison.
In what ways was it different?
Well, when you were soldiering in Britain in those times, you were always up against the civilians. The civilians always thought the soldiers were the dregs of the British people. What they didn't realise was they were the first defence of the British people. But there was always, you would go, and they wouldn't say it straight to your face, but when you'd got past, you could hear them say, "There's that lazy so-and-so," or "You only went into the army because you're too lazy to work," and things like that. You would hear that. But a great many of the men I served with from 1932, a lot of those men had been unemployed and couldn't get work, and the only place they could get a job or to be a little independent was in the armed forces, the Army, Navy or Air Force, wherever they could get. And I have a letter which I received from a man I served with in the same squad. And he said he was pleased to be in the army rather than hanging around trying, chasing for a job. And that was in 1932. And at one time he was a warrant officer, one, a regimental. Well then, in Britain, as I've said, you were up against the civilian population. And then you were always had to look almost regimental every time you turned out from your barracks. There was no relaxation. If you wanted to leave your barrack area, the perimeter of your barrack area, you had to be properly dressed. Where in India, you could walk around in white suit, slacks, or khaki drill with a belt on, and nobody took any notice of you because they knew what you were. You were a soldier. And in barracks, you could walk around without a topi. That was after the heat time, after tea time. You could walk around the barracks without a topi on or without a cap on or a hat on. Where in Britain, you had to wear a cap once you left. The only time you didn't wear your cap was when you went for your meals. But after that, if you were seen outside without a cap on, without headgear, you'd be charged with being improperly dressed. And if you weren't properly, all your buttons and everything else, that to be either uniform or whatever, you know, whatever the dress was for the day. But if you weren't on duty, after when tea time came up, you could go to the dining room with a pair of shorts and a vest on for your tea. But in England or Britain, you had to be with either your work clothes or your SD. That was the difference as trying to get on with. Where if I wanted, when I was at Catrick or Fenham Barracks, if I wanted to leave the barrack room and go to the canteen at night for a cup of tea, or I had to have a cap on. I didn't need it. I could go to the canteen in India and anywhere I was stationed, I could go to the canteen without one. I could go with an open neck shirt. I could go with trousers with the putty belt on. Where if I went to the canteen in Britain, I would either have to my working clothes, which was called canvas, it's now denim, or service dress without a belt. That was about the only privilege you had. You didn't wear a belt in barracks. You could wear slacks, but in India you needn't wear a hat, and you could have a open neck shirt, whether it was khaki or whether it was white. You could wear khaki slacks, white slacks with a white shirt or a khaki shirt. That was the difference in the thing. And as I say, people were looking to find faults with you in this country, doesn't matter where you went, whether it was in the village you were born in or the town or where you're passing through. Civilians would be always looking to find fault. If you didn't carry out your duties, they were watching you and they would report you. But in India, nobody gave a damn.
What are your outstanding thoughts on India, spanning the years that you were there? What is it that stands out for you?
The poverty of the people. The downtrodden people. There was vast riches in the country, but there was vast poverty. That always seemed to hurt, sinking more to me than anything else.
You were a rifleman, and then you had this special nursing training. Were there any other specialist training given to you?
Not there, no. No, not there.
Who was commanding you in India?
I had two COs. Colonel Congreves was the CO when I went out, and he was taken sick leave, never come back. And Major Yates, the senior major, was acting CO until he was appointed CO.
What was he like?
Hard. We're both hard. Colonel Congreve took over from Colonel Jeffries. That was the officer's son I was looking after. And there was one day at Barrackpore, I'd been told about him, that he always rode around the area on a horse. And I'm not sure whether I'd been out on a run on this morning or what it was, but I was coming along by the track by the race course at Barrackpore, and I saw this person on the horse, and he stopped me, and he said, "How do you know who I am?" I said, "Oh, the men in the barrack room told me to expect, say, the old colonel." The funny thing is, when we came back to England, I looked after him when he was stopping with Peter, his son, at Lightwater, in Surrey, when he came to stay a time or two with Peter. So Peter was still a lieutenant then. But Peter had been acting agit and all of the time we were in the Sudan. But I never had any dealings with, other than when he'd retired. But they were all hard. I never found a soft officer. If there was one, I've got to see him yet. They were good soldiers. Most of them were good soldiers. But they were all hard.
RSMs, do you remember them?
Oh, I had the same RSM. Archie Goddard was the 2nd Battalion. RSM West was the regimental depot. And what was the name of the other one? 1st Battalion's RSM. Marks, I think his regimental sergeant major Marks. Marks, he used to kiss and blind you on the square and everywhere you went. But if he heard you swearing, he would charge you. You don't do as I do, you do as I say. Oh, aye, that was RSM Marks.
Hard men, but did you respect them?
Oh, aye. Some you respected and some you didn't. There was the odd one you didn't respect. But they were all hard, all disciplined. Oh, aye. No, make no mistake about that. They were good. Most of them were good officers.